Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, William Wong on behalf of Appellant and Respondent South Coast Air Quality Management District.
This case rises or falls on whether the forum defendant rule is procedural or jurisdictional. Isn't that correct?
Your Honor, actually there are two issues in this case, not only the forum defendant rule, but whether the district as can be a person under the federal officer removal statute.
Okay. Go at it.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. But, Your Honor, the district does agree that the key issue that really a lot of case law is on, except for the Ninth Circuit, is whether the local no local defendant rule is a jurisdictional or a non-jurisdictional issue. If it's non-jurisdictional.
That's an open question in this circuit.
It is an open question in this circuit, Your Honor.
Eight other circuits have said it's procedural.
That's correct.
One circuit has said it's jurisdictional.
That's correct, Your Honor. And I believe there are several district courts that in this Ninth Circuit that have split on this issue.
Needs the answer.
Your Honor, I believe the answer is that it is non-jurisdictional. Let me go through, in fact, the reasoning of the various eight circuits that have discussed this issue. And I believe that reasoning is actually much more persuasive than perhaps the reasoning espoused by the Eighth Circuit in the Hurt case. To be specific, Your Honor, two circuits have considered the issue, the Third Circuit and the Sixth Circuit, as to whether removal jurisdiction is essentially whether no local defendant rule is or not is waivable. These two circuits have considered removal jurisdiction to be really independent of original subject matter jurisdiction. In fact, this Ninth Circuit in the Morris case has held that removal jurisdiction is waivable. On those grounds, Your Honor, I think the Ninth Circuit would fall in the same camp as perhaps the Third and Sixth Circuit in deciding that removal jurisdiction is
waivable. The Morris case, and I guess there's another one, too, I think called Spencer.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which would seem to suggest that at least those judges that have had this issue tangentially here in the Ninth Circuit might think that it was procedural.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree. I would also point out that there's another Ninth Circuit case called Vasquez, which I cited in my briefs, that actually considered a different statute involving removal jurisdiction. That was under 1445C, and the court also found that to be a procedural issue that could be waived by the parties. Going through the Sixth Circuit also, actually, interestingly enough, analyzed the legislative history of the issue, whether the no local defendant rule is jurisdictional or not. And actually, it went back to the Removal Act of 1875 and determined, even at that point, that the no local defendant rule is one that could be waived. The 11th Circuit, actually, in the Snapper case, actually analyzed the legislative history up to the current day and basically also decided that through analysis of legislative history, indeed the most recent version, which removed the limitation of defect in removal procedure and broadened it to be basically any defect other than subject matter jurisdiction, also decided that it confirmed its analysis that it would be a waivable defect. I would also point out, Your Honor, that the Seventh Circuit actually analyzed this issue also in the Hurley case, and basically based on two other reasons, apart from the reasons enunciated by the Sixth Circuit, the Third Circuit, and the Fifth Circuit, and the Eleventh Circuit, basically found that the Supreme Court is trending toward what it felt was basically treating defects in diversity jurisdiction to be curable, and so it felt based on that, as well as the policy underlying the local defendant rule, that policy is to preserve plaintiff's choice of state forum, which they felt that in this case, if you remove it, the plaintiff is free to waive it. They felt that also supported the argument that the no local defendant rule is simply non-jurisdictional and could be waived.
Is there any, other than the procedure, is there any substantive federal question involved in this case?
Yes, Your Honor, there is. And that's why I also pointed out that we had removed the case based upon the federal officer removal statute. This case involves the adoption of rules which the plaintiff is challenging as being improper or actually unauthorized. We had argued that we were acting pursuant to a federal consent decree, which had mandated.
Of course, we don't even reach that if we agree with you on the form defendant.
That's correct, Your Honor. You don't need to reach that issue if you agree with me on the first issue. That's right. Apart from that, Your Honor, I do believe there is a need for Ninth Circuit clarity on this issue, simply because the district courts are split.
Let me just clarify one thing for you. Since this the removal on the basis of a federal defendant is unique to your case, the Lively case doesn't have that issue. But wasn't that issue litigated between the very same parties?
It was, actually. Yeah.
In fact, in a prior case, the panel of this court dismissed an appeal.
Pursuant to 1447D, yeah. Your Honor. Actually,
so isn't that issue sort of subject to issue preclusion?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
It's simply because there is a key distinguishing factor between the two. In this case, Your Honor, the defendant did not timely move to remand the case.
Why is that so?
Well, Your Honor,
how does that make that different than the prior case?
The well, Your Honor,
parties is basically the same issue.
Your Honor, the merits of that case was never really decided. It was simply precluded from decision because of Section 1447.
Well, all those arguments could have been raised in another case, correct?
In terms of 1447D, Your Honor? No, but the merits were not ever reached in this case. In fact, Your Honor, an earlier panel had reviewed the same arguments and basically said that the case could go forward. That decision was actually reversed later on. So
yes.
There is basically a split in decision as to that. In fact, the underlying matter in that previous case, the district court had actually found it to be properly removed to district court. Unfortunately, the district court, the district judge, unfortunately, died just before.
Right, Judge Hupp.
Judge Hupp, yes. Right at summary judgment motions. And Judge Otero later on reconsidered the motion and then remanded it back.
But as Judge Wake said, unless we were to determine that this is jurisdictional.
That's correct, Your Honor. We need not decide this issue of federal officer.
Who is the federal officer under whom the district is acting so as to trigger the federal officer removal statute?
Your Honor, we would contend that it was federal, District Judge Hupp. Basically, his consent decree that required us to implement these rules.
There's nothing in his consent decree that purported to determine the procedures under state law by which changes would be made, was there?
No, but, Your Honor, the plaintiff's complaint goes beyond simply just procedure. It does challenge the basic authority of the district to adopt the rules. Judge Hupp did decide that.
That's a state law issue as well.
Your Honor, we would contend that under the federal consent decree that we were required to basically adopt
the consent decree can vest a state officer, state official, with more authority than they have under state law.
Your Honor, the district had actually raised the issue of whether feasibility, if it precluded the district from adopting implementing the state implementation plan, a federally enforceable plan, that perhaps we would be excused from that requirement. Judge Hupp said that was not the case under the Clean Air Act, that we were preempted.
So is any agency implementing a state implementation plan acting under a federal officer for purposes of removal to federal court?
Well, Your Honor, I think in this case, it's not necessarily acting pursuant to the SIP, but it's also acting pursuant to a federal consent decree that makes it.
So the fact that it's a SIP doesn't get you into federal court. There has to be a federal court consent decree. Is that your argument?
Our argument is that the fact that the federal consent decree was there it's basically acting under a federal officer.
Save some time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel?
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. I want to touch briefly on jurisdiction because I think the issue came up in
the context. Tell the tape recorder who you are.
Jeff Margulies, Fulbright and Jaworski for petitioner NPCA. The issue of jurisdiction is important because 1447D says that you don't have jurisdiction as a court of appeals over a determination of the district court that the district court lacks subject matter jurisdiction. And I think what South Coast is trying to argue here is you can look behind a district court determination on jurisdiction and say, well, no, that wasn't really jurisdictional. That was wrong. Say the district court said, I'm not going to grant subject matter jurisdiction because I think diversity jurisdiction only can be invoked by people with blue eyes. South Coast would say, well, clearly that's not a proper basis. That's really no different than what happened in this case. The issue was in front of the district court on the stay order, and he said, this is a jurisdictional order. So that's issue one.
So if the district court erroneously labels an obviously procedural defect in removal as jurisdictional, that insulates it from review, correct?
Well, that particular question has never been answered by a court. What the courts have said is, if a court makes an order that it lacks subject matter jurisdiction, even if clearly erroneous, it's not reviewable.
Even if it's clearly procedural and it's erroneously called substantive?
And I submit that that issue has never been answered in any way.
Well, I think it was answered in the Korea Exchange Bank from the Third Circuit in 1995, where they upheld appellate jurisdiction to challenge a sua sponte remand performed upon it, didn't they?
The issue there was whether the court could sua sponte remand after the 30 days.
No, the first issue was whether the Court of Appeals had jurisdiction
correct.
To consider that allegedly and indeed in fact erroneous decision.
That is correct.
So isn't that case at least dead against you as to appellate jurisdiction to consider this question?
I'm not sure that I agree that it is.
How about the Shell Oil case from the Fifth Circuit in 1991? That was a mandamus case before the Quackenbush case said you could appeal them directly, where they addressed the exact same substantive issues and granted mandamus relief because the district judge had erroneously determined that the foreign defendant rule was substantive rather than procedural.
And I understand that that particular court had looked at the issue of whether there was diversity jurisdiction under the no local defendant rule was the same question as whether there was appellate jurisdiction. So yes, that court did say that. And to the extent I
so you're at
this circuit has not addressed the question.
You're asking us to disagree with at least those circuits and some others when you say there is no appellate jurisdiction to correct this error if it is an error.
And I apologize, Your Honor. There's no appellate jurisdiction in this circuit that's reached that point. Let me address 2 points.
You would agree, though, wouldn't you, that we always have jurisdiction to decide whether we have
absolutely.
Jurisdiction.
Absolutely. 2 points that relate to that. Number one, the federal officer portion of this is not reviewable. Clearly, under Mesa, California, federal officer jurisdiction statute is it's called a pure jurisdiction statute. So whether the district court correctly ruled or not is not reviewable. And there are cases in this circuit and elsewhere where there are two bases for remand, and the court may review one and may not review the other.
Was there a motion to remand in this case?
There was a motion to remand. And let me explain a little bit. I think one of the issues that's come up, the early 1441B no local defendant cases talked about a situation where the case proceeded to judgment or some action was taken. The plaintiff was unhappy with it and said, wait a minute, no local defendant can remove, send me back to state court, which was the same paradigm you had in Grubbs, where the court said you can't, you know, going to judgment, you've waived objections to removal jurisdiction. The later cases have taken that and then said, well, Grubbs applies any time beyond the 30 days. Any time. And here we had a petition filed on the 20th for removal of February and a remand motion on March 30th. And I think there's a key difference here. And what Grubbs talked about is waiver. Okay? Does 30 days automatically waive it? What happened in this case was on the 20th of February, there was an extant order from Judge Hupp saying that there was federal officer jurisdiction under the facts of the prior case, which were the same facts of this case. We had a new petition for removal, and had I moved to remand based just on diversity jurisdiction, well, the court might have said you're right within 30 days, but there's federal officer jurisdiction. Why should I have taken a futile act in moving to remand? March 4th, 2 weeks after this motion or this removal petition is filed, Judge Otero issues his order saying Judge Hupp's order is reversed. There is no federal officer jurisdiction. Now, in my mind, there's no basis for jurisdiction under either prong. It's gone. I no longer have a futile basis for moving to remand.
What was the date again?
March 4th, 2004. And immediately thereafter, we asked the district, will you voluntarily agree to send this case back to state court? The answer was no. We filed a motion on March 30th. In a case that came down from this circuit on the 26th of April, called Durham v. Lockheed Martin, another panel looked at what I think is a mirror issue which is removal. You have 30 days to remove a case once it's removable. And there, what happened was there was some discovery. The case was removable on a federal question grounds, but it required the consent of all defendants. The defendant didn't remove, thinking, I know that nobody's going to agree with this, I won't remove. Interrogatory responses came out that revealed the federal officer removal statute. And Judge Kaczynski's opinion said the 30-day clock started again. It was futile to require removal. There was no basis for federal officer removal. So we're going to let the defendant remove once these new facts come to light. And under whether 1441B is procedural or jurisdictional, there's no way it could have been waived by my client at the time the petition was filed for removal, because Judge Huff's order would have precluded us from relitigating.
You could have filed it anyway, just for the record.
Well, but, you know, Your Honor, I've got to
do that all the time.
Yeah, I guess I have a little bit of a problem with Rule 11 and why argue that.
I don't know why that would generate a Rule 11 thing. I mean, lawyers do that all the time. I want to preserve this issue. It's not been settled in the Ninth Circuit. I'm doing it because I want to protect myself.
I get back to the question of Grubbs and waiver, though. And Grubbs, which is the latest Supreme Court announcement on the subject, does not go so far to say that mere lapse of 30 days is a waiver. Grubbs says you have to take some affirmative action. If you take it to trial, if you get a judgment, then we're going to measure jurisdiction by the time of removal. But the Supreme Court has never gone so far to say that 30 days and it automatically elapses.
In this case, though, as I recall, in this case, District Court Judge Klausner? Who was it?
It was Judge Pragerson.
The other one.
Right. This is Judge Pragerson. Judge Pragerson is the one who entered the order in this case.
Yes. You know, we have, even as a question of, you know, should I have filed the motion, we have two rulemakings that are based on the same basic legal principles, the same basic facts, the same basic arguments that are consolidated in the state court to be determined together. Why would I, you know, what would be the purpose of seeking to split them apart when we have a ruling? And in the context of Grubbs and in the context of waiver, I'd submit that given the facts of this case and the ruling flip-flopping in the interim, I don't believe there was a waiver. I'd also like to very, very briefly address what I think is there's a suggestion in the AQMD's briefs about what we've conceded on diversity. We've conceded the amount of controversy. There was no allegation in the removal petition of an amount of controversy. We've not conceded anything. There are still some subject matter jurisdiction issues here that were never raised by the removal. We haven't conceded that a writ of mandate against a state official is a civil action within the meaning of 1441, because I believe there's case law to support the theory that it's not. And we haven't conceded that this court, given that the Judge Otero's ruling has sent the first case back, that the district court shouldn't abstain from deciding these cases and let the case go back to state court.
What does all that have to do with whether or not the local defendant rule is jurisdictional?
You're right. It has nothing to do with that. There are other jurisdictional issues, and I don't.
But we're only dealing. There's only certain issues that are raised here, correct?
The district raised that issue in its brief and said that we did not concede. We conceded.
Well,
subject
they have to
matter.
Prevail on whether or not it's jurisdictional or procedural, correct?
Pardon me?
They have to. The district has to prevail.
Yes.
Basically. That this is a procedural rule.
Yes.
Let me ask one last question.
Sure.
The argument you've made that the March 4 reversal or vacating of Judge Huff's order concerning federal officer removal, you're arguing that that resets the clock to zero for removal on the diversity question. Is that in your brief?
No, Your Honor. It was something that as I was going through the record and recalling what happened at the time that this was filed.
Duran's a post-briefing case, isn't it?
Pardon me?
Duran versus Lockheed Martin is post the briefs in this case?
That case was filed a week ago. So it was something that I read the case, and in going through the record, I started thinking, you know, it sounds analogous at the very least.
Duran is a case where there's two separate bases of removal, and one arose at a different time from the other.
Correct.
Whereas in this case, there are arguably two bases of removal, and they both arose at the same time, right?
Well, that's correct. No, absolutely. The issue is when what is waiver in the context of having a court rule on this in the other case.
Okay.
Thank you very much,
Your Honor.
Thank
you for your argument. In the future, when something like Duran happens, file a 28-J letter.
I apologize. Thank you.
That's all right. But you don't have to apologize. Counsel? What say you to the restart the clock theory?
Actually, Your Honor, the district did file a 28-J letter pointing out the Duran case. And actually, the Duran case basically supports the district's position that the federal officer removal statute needs to be considered in a broader context than the normal removal statutes. But in terms of resetting clock, it reset the clock essentially for filing to remove a case, essentially. It speaks not to resetting the clock for the removed plaintiff to basically move for a remand. So it doesn't deal with that issue. One other thing, Your Honor, the Grubbs case. Mr. Margulies really relies on the Grubbs case for pointing out that it didn't really provide any 30-day limit, or at least didn't speak to a 30-day limit on waivers. And actually, in the Grubbs case, Your Honor, is a little bit unusual simply because removal was based on a federal question. It was not based on diversity. So there really was nothing for the removing plaintiff to really object to in terms of the diversity. The court just later discovered that because the federal question was not there, then it had to discern whether or not other bases of federal jurisdiction was there. They found diversity and basically found that basically there was a waiver simply because no one raised the issue.
Okay. Thank you for your argument. And thank both sides for their arguments. Very interesting case. Be submitted for decision. Now I'll proceed to Lively versus Wild Oats.